desire y'all's prayers this evening. I don't know about y'all, it was mentioned earlier, the beautiful day. It has been, I think, a beautiful day since that storm blew through. I've been enjoying the cooler weather, the beautiful sunshine. It's been wonderful. So the topic I'd like to talk about tonight is misuse of time and how that relates to us. I'd like to start off in 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting off in verses 3 through 5. Says, if any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such withdraw thyself. Now, this is said after Paul, in the first part of this book, had kind of been talking to Timothy. He had talked to Timothy about personal interactions between believers. He had talked to Timothy about dealing with widows, about taking care of family, respecting elders and those in authority. He'd even given Timothy some general advice around his health and just how to deal with personal matters. He had talked to Timothy about advice regarding servants and how they should respond to their masters, whether the master was saved or unsaved, how they should respond. And then he gets down here to these three verses we've read, and he's basically warning Timothy that there's going to be people that they're not going to want to consent to the teachings that you've been given. They're going to turn and go a different way. And the thing that struck me when I was reading this, when I was studying, is the perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds. Because what is a perverse disputing? What does that really mean? Does it mean that it's a heated argument? Does it mean it's a constant argument? So looking up the words, it's a compound word, paradiatribe, I think is how it says. And it comes from two parts, the first part meaning aside, implying an error or wrong, and the other one about waste of the passing of time. And so both Thayer's definition says useless occupation, empty business, misemployment. And then there's also the Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament and early Christian literature also defines it as a waste of time in unimportant matters, useless occupation. And I got to thinking about that. In our lives, do we pay attention to what we're doing? To how we're working? Are we making a difference with our time? Or are we just busy? Just busy, 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 busy. Have you ever had those days? I can attest at work sometimes it seems like I have days where I feel like from the time I get on the computer till the time I walk away at the end of the day, I've been busy, 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 but when I look back over the day and try to put my finger on anything I've accomplished, I can't put my finger on anything. It was either a bunch of meetings and we made no decisions, or it was just a day of busyness that at the end of the day didn't satisfy me. And actually, if my boss was to know how unproductive the day was, he probably wouldn't be satisfied either. He might have asked, why were you in all those meetings doing nothing? You know, I wanted you to accomplish something with the time you had today. So two things popped to mind when I was studying a scripture. Some examples of misused time. So what about the doctrinal scholar who, as I've worded it here, can go deep into the dark crevices of the scriptures and pull out esoteric meanings and teachings on arcane things or minor topics such as how to tie the very thing even down to the herbs in your garden? Didn't Jesus talk about the Pharisees teaching stuff like that? They spent a lot of time, a lot of effort. And what did Jesus say about their time and effort spent on that? There were other things I'd have liked you to pay attention to. There were bigger, more important things. There were things that, yes, you really dug in. You really got deep. But at the end of the day, you walked past grace. You walked past mercy. You missed what I really wanted you to be working on. Well, what about the folks who focus on when and how to wash your hands so as you don't fall afoul of the traditions that's been taught? Do y'all remember Jesus talking about that? They challenged him why his disciples weren't washing their hands before they ate. And Jesus is like, well, you know, because the person that challenged Jesus said, this is what the elders have taught. This is the tradition. And Jesus is like, let's talk about your traditions here. You know, yes, you do teach that, but you also teach some other traditions that aren't right. You've spent a lot of time. Now I am jumping to a different section of Scripture. A lot of time taking care of the outside, cleaning the outside. But the inside's not where it needs to be. Do you know we need to look carefully at what we spend our time on? Even when we feel like we're doing things for the Lord. Did the Pharisees feel like what they studied and what they poured their time and effort in, do you feel like they felt like it was a waste of time? Just based on what's in the Scripture, would you feel like they said, we've been wasting our time? Or do you think that they felt like this was important? Knowing how to tithe was very important. Washing your hands in the right sequence before you ate, important. You know those things are important. You know, Jesus did mention sometimes what the Pharisees do, teach you to do it. Just don't do it the way they do it. Make sure you're not spending too much time on the things that don't matter, that you're just bogged down in the minutia of trying to be so exacting that you just can't get out of it. I'd like to turn now to Jeremiah chapter 2. And I'm going to just hit two verses here in chapter 2. Jeremiah 2 and verse 8. It says, the priest said not, where is the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me. And the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after things that do not profit. And then dropping on down to verse 11, it says, hath the nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods? But my people have changed their glory for that which doth not profit. Now, I wanted to bring these two verses out. The Lord had been talking about his people and how when he had brought them into the land of Canaan, they hadn't focused on what he had asked them to focus on. He had asked them to do certain things. He had asked them to accomplish certain things, to put the people in the land out, to not follow after the people of the land. And yet what was happening in verse 8? The priest said not, where is the Lord? And they that handle the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and prophets prophesied by Baal, and walked after things that do not profit. Wouldn't that be misused time? The priests, the pastors, the prophets, the people that studied the law, God's saying these all are not, they are off base. Do you think any of those men back in their day, if you would have asked them, are you spending your time wisely? Do you think they'd have said, no, I know I'm off playing around with Baal and you know, or do you think they would have said, no, I'm being diligent here. I'm doing what I need to do. I think these men would have tried to defend themselves. No, this is important matters. This is important stuff. But it wasn't what the Lord needed. So let's go to Ephesians now. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 15. It says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. So here we see this verse. We've all heard of redeeming the time. And when it talks about redeeming time here, it's not talking about just the succession of minutes. Just, you know, well, what did you do with your last 5 minutes? It's talking about the season or an opportune time to do something, a period of opportunity. There's something that truly needs to be done now. Are we redeeming the time with what needs to be done now? Or are we busy? You know, at work, we got a new chief technology officer in middle of last year. And so at the end of the year, when performance evaluations were being done, a lot of managers did not get very good performance evaluations, and they caused quite a stink. She had a meeting, called in all the leadership and IT to say, you know, well, let's talk about this. And a bunch of the managers was like, well, we've been working hard all year long, and we don't feel like we're getting any credit for the hard work we've done. And they were really adamant that they had put a lot of hard work in, and they at least should get some credit for that. And the lady responded, why do you deserve credit? You spent the year working really hard on the wrong things. That's worse than if you'd worked poorly on the right things. Because you put a whole year's of hard effort into something that's not going to move the business forward. That doesn't meet or match up with any of our business goals, doesn't match up with any of our strategies, but you've been working really hard at it. Why should I give you credit for a misuse of time? That stuck with me when I heard her tell that to the group. Because, you know, it was, in a way, it was refreshing to hear somebody speak clearly about the fact that hard work is to be admired if the work is needed. The hard work that's just for the sake of working hard, what's the point? Just to say that I put in 10-hour day of really hard work, well, what did you accomplish? Nothing. Kind of in the military, when I was in the Army, they had pointless work sometimes. There was a couple of big bundles of 2x6s, and I think there's some 2x8s, and these boards, some of them were 20 foot long. I mean, actual bundles of lumber that was out behind our electronic repair shop in Germany. And it seemed like 2 or 3 times a year, we'd go out there, and they'd get the soldiers out there, and we'd, one stick at a time, carry those bundles of lumber down to the other end of the building, stack them all up neat. And then we go back inside. And a couple of months go by, and we'd go move them back down here. I was at that base for 3 years. I never saw a single person take a single stick off of that pile of lumber and use it for anything. We just moved it back and forth. And always to the same 2 spots. It never went to a new spot. And, you know, sometimes you have to start asking, what are we doing? And, you know, one of the sergeants says, well, y'all look around, look like you're not busy, so we're going to make sure you're busy. Well, what's the point? It just makes people grumpy. Especially once you start realizing, you know, didn't we move this lumber like 3 months ago from that spot where we're restacking it now? So if God was to look at your life, look at the work you're trying to do for him, how would he rate it? Would he say, wow, you've been really busy? And that's it? Or would he say, wow, you've been accomplishing things? It's a little different conversation to say, I'm accomplishing something versus I've been really busy. I feel like that out in the world, just based oftentimes working with employees over the last probably 15, 20 years that I've dealt with them, There's a lot of people in the world that feel like if they've been busy, that's good enough. Actually producing an effort, well, that's lagniappe. If you get an actual accomplishment out of me, that's icing on the cake. I actually had one supervisor quite a few years ago, probably about 10 years ago. He gave everybody, all of his direct reports, he gave them all the highest rating on their performance for the year. And his team was not a high-performing team. And I asked him, I was like, well, why did you rate the employees? Like, I mean, you rated them all at the max. And he's like, well, with everything that was going on this year, all the changes in the directions and changes in just the way we do things, I figure the fact that they kept showing up for work, that was outstanding. Now, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad you feel that way, but this is not going to pass. That's not the rating they're going to get. You need to rate them on the work they've actually done. Just showing up and continuing to collect a paycheck isn't what they're getting paid for. There's something they're supposed to be accomplishing. There is something they're supposed to do. If you notice there in verse 17, wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. There is something God has for every one of us. Something He wants you to be doing. It may be just being the best mom or best dad to your family you can be. That may be what He wants you to do right now. It may be something different. He may be like, I want you to be a missionary. I want you to go do things. But He has something for you. There is a will He has for all of us that He wants us to be able to do things. Now in Ephesians chapter 5, let's back up to verse 6 and start reading there. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of obedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For you were sometimes darkness, but now ye are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Now this one, it says, let no man deceive you with vain words. Vain words, once again, looking into the meaning of that, empty. Meaningless. And then another part of that definition that intrigued me was aimless. Aimless. Words that really aren't intended to take you anywhere. They're words just to be words. They're just to fill up space. They're just to be words to talk. It says, don't let these empty, worthless, meaningless, aimless things distract you. And then down there in verse 11 talks about have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness. Now unfruitful is obviously one of the definitions is bearing no fruit. But also unprofitable, not yielding what it ought to yield. Now, it's kind of a running joke with Diane and I. We had some cherry trees in our yard in Denham Springs, I'm going to call them the artistic kind. They produce no fruit. I see no purpose in those trees. I'm not into big, beautiful trees that don't do anything. I'm the type of guy, if I plant a tree, I want something to eat off of it. And every year they would bloom, and then that was it. Then you have all this mess of blossoms rotting on the ground. I'm like, what is the point? If I'm going to have a fruit tree in my yard that's going to make a mess like that, at least give me some fruit off of it. I want something from it. Now, do you know that the Lord looks at our lives and He wants something from our lives? We're trees planted by Him. He wants us to grow, to be profitable, but He wants us to bear fruit. Part of this talked about proving what is acceptable to God. So what is acceptable to God? How do you know and learn what is acceptable? How do you prove something? What does it mean to prove something? How many of y'all remember the days in math class of having to prove theorems? I don't know about y'all. I do remember doing it in math class. I have not ever used that in the real world once I left school. I don't work as a mathematician. But the whole point of the theorems was you were supposed to be able to do things and to prove it, to say whether it was true or false. Well, we're supposed to prove what is acceptable to God, and to prove means to try, to discern, to distinguish the matter before us. The Hebrew word also includes a notion of proving a thing, whether it is worthy or not. And thinking back to our use of time, to our activities, when we do things, do we stop and think about, is what I'm doing worthy of a servant of the Lord to be doing? Is what I'm doing, is the way I'm conducting business, is this worthy? Is this acceptable to God? If I had to go take the word and use it as the basis for my personal performance evaluation at work, how would I say the Lord would evaluate my activities on the job? My activities around the home? My activities in the congregation? How would the Lord, would he say that I was doing things acceptable to him? Things that he wanted? Back there in Ephesians 5 and 17, things that were acceptable to his will, things that he wanted us to do. Psalms 90 and 12 says, "So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." This is one of those things that we do well to consider. Are we aware of the limited amount of time we have to do things? I know as a young person, sometimes it felt like, you know, the years just are endless before you. And then time passes and suddenly a year doesn't seem to last as long. And you keep getting older, and now a year seems to last about 6 months. And you're wondering, what? I wanted to get all sorts of different things done this year, and I haven't got hardly half of them done. I'm speaking for myself here. I don't know if any of you, the rest of y'all felt like that, but there's been times it's like, where did the time go? And then even the question, what did I do with the time? What did I accomplish in this past year? Did I get anything done that was needful, that was desired? But it also talked about that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. So when we look at our shortness of time, we need to be asking ourselves, not just what am I trying to accomplish, but what about for the Lord? What does the Lord need me to do? What is it that in that year he would have liked for me to accomplish for him? Did I make any progress on that? Let's look at Romans 12. Romans 12 and verse 2. "And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So here once again we have the proving, the renewing of our mind, but so that we could prove what is the acceptable will of God. Now, to renew your mind, what does the word renew mean? If I'm going to renew something. If you're in construction, a word that would come up would be to renovate. So how would you renovate your mind? I mean, thinking about the chapel after the flood. We came in here and we basically renovated the chapel. So what did we do? Well, first we had to take the stuff off the walls that wasn't good anymore. We had to get the stuff out of the building that wasn't necessary. We had to take the floor up. We had to clean things out, dry it out. There was a lot of things that had to be done, that was necessary to be done before we could start putting things back. What if the folks that came down to help out would have came down here and we told them, no, don't worry about taking the wet sheetrock off the wall. We can just put the sheetrock over the top of it. We'll just sheetrock over the top of that wet stuff. It'll hide the mold. How would that have gone? You know, when the Lord wants to renew our minds, He's wanting to remove damaged thinking. He knows that sometimes we've got ideas or ways of that we think about things, and it's not really right. It's been damaged. We've maybe been impacted by the flood of the world coming in against us, and there's just things that we don't have quite right. What about the ideas we've been standing on, the floor, if you will? Things that we thought, yeah, this is good. But we find out, well, it's not lasting, though. That particular idea, that particular flooring of our mind, it's not lasting. It's not something that's there for the long haul. And He wants to bring in new thoughts. He wants to bring in durable teachings. You know, it's talking about empty teachings over there for perverse disputings, where the person that was putting out the sayings, they were meaningless. They were emptiness. They had no point. And God's like, yes, don't get sucked down into those. Stay focused on what I need you to do. And what does He need us to do? What isn't that His will? Shouldn't we be seeking the Lord's will for what we need to do? Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2 says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down on the right hand of the throne of God." So here we see reference to the race that is set before us. Now, I don't know how many of y'all are familiar with track and field events, but there are races called relay races, where oftentimes there's 4 or 8 people, and each person runs 1 or 2 laps, depending upon how far the distance is. There's a baton, and each person, they grab the baton and they run and they hand it off to the next person. Do you know if you want to win that race, you have to run your section of the race at the right time, in the right order? You can't just line everybody up and the one guy with the baton and all other the other 3 people just run 1 lap real fast and say, okay, we're done. All of us ran a lap. We all had our hand on the baton. Right? Because, you know, that's not the way the race was set out before the team. It was set out with a specific purpose. One guy runs 1 lap holding the baton. When he gets done, there's a marking on the lanes on the track that shows how many feet they have to hand off the baton. And they have to hand it off in that space, and then he hands off the next, but it has to be, each person has to run their leg of that race in order, in the right timing, in the right sequence. To do anything else loses a race. Mentioned in Sunday school this morning, there's a lady, Rosie Ruiz, who ran the New York Marathon. I want to say it's in 2 hours and 56 minutes. And then that qualified her to run the Boston Marathon. And she ran the Boston Marathon in 2 hours and 31 minutes. At the time that she ran the Boston Marathon, her time for the Boston Marathon was the fastest a woman had ever run the Boston Marathon. And her time was recorded as the 3rd fastest time for a woman running a marathon anywhere. And of course, naturally, they're interviewing her. They're talking to her about the race. And there were some inconsistencies that started to come up. One, somebody noticed she wasn't really sweating. Now, a marathon is 26.2 miles. And if you just ran 26.2 miles in just 1 minute over 2.5 hours, chances are you're going to be breathing hard and sweating. She wasn't. She wasn't breathing that hard at all. They asked her about a particular part of the course where the course goes through a college campus. And there's usually college students there, and the first woman that comes through, they'll usually cheer and holler to encourage her and ask her, what do you think when you ran through there? Well, she didn't think there was anything remarkable when she ran through there. She didn't remember the students yelling. And they started being curious. Well, wait a minute, you know, that's been one of the hallmarks of all the other women that's won the races. That's been a point of motivation for them when they went through that area and they were being encouraged. And somebody happened to notice that the race she had supposedly ran in New York just a while earlier, she'd improved her time by 25 minutes. Now, I don't know if y'all realize that, but that means she ran the race almost half an hour faster in just a few weeks later. And when somebody asked her about that, she goes, oh, I just woke up this morning with a lot of energy. So needless to say, the folks that were in charge of the race, they're now really curious. They start digging into the past. And they start looking at New York. And the more they dug into New York, they found out that the lady, when she had ran the New York Marathon, she had actually, somewhere along the race, left the course, got on the subway, took the subway down to just a short distance from where the finish line was at, and then she got out and walked across the finish line. And when she crossed the finish line, they asked her why she was walking. She told them, well, I've injured my leg, I can't run. But because she finished the race, in their eyes at the time, they awarded her as if she had completed it. Now, as they got to digging into it, however, they found a lady that remembered riding the subway across town with her. So that went away. And the more they dug into the Boston Marathon, they found out that there were two guys from Harvard who remembered seeing her about a half mile before the finish line. She popped out of the crowd and took off running. And so they went back, and in a lot of these races, they'll have spotters every so often down the race that's kind of checking the numbers to make sure who's made it so far down. A bunch of the spotters did not remember this lady ever coming past. And so they took that award from her. Now, she maintained publicly that, well, you know, I did run the race. But one of her friends said that a couple of months after all of this had kind of broke over, she mentioned to him that, yeah, I didn't realize the lead ladies hadn't passed yet when I jumped back out on her track. Because think about it, if she wouldn't have been first, if she'd have just finished, you know, 10th, 11th like she'd done in New York, there'd probably been nobody at the moment that noticed it. But you know, there's a race that was set before her. Now, while here in the world, you know, you can fool people sometimes. Do you know in heaven, when God asks you, how did you run that race I set before you? He has one of the best records of what we've ever done. There's nothing in your life that's going to be missed. When it comes time at judgment for him to say, okay, you started the race well. Good job so far. However, I've noticed after the first half mile that the course went and it kind of seemed to loop back, and you cut through a little group of trees there. Why did you do that? Why did you cut through there? She lost her reward. She had started the race and she had finished it. As far as I left the starting line and I crossed the finish line. But other than that, she hadn't done anything that matched up with the will or the intent of the person organizing the race. The race was intended to prove that person's capability of running that distance. It had a purpose. But because I don't feel like that, I'm going to do something. I want to get credit for racing, but I don't really want to do the whole race. When it comes to our race before God, are we misusing the time? Are we looking at things and we're running around and thinking, nah, I don't see the point of, I mean, I see in the military, I did mention this morning too, sorry class. We would run 2 miles every 6 months. We had to run 2 miles for time. It was part of making sure you were still fit. Sometimes it would be just in a little place where you'd run around a track. But sometimes they would put you on a road and it would be a straight road. And a mile down the road is another sergeant and you take off running and you run down there, you go around him and you come back. It never ceased to amaze me the people that would try to run halfway between the two and turn around and come back. There's a reason why they had a sergeant at the other end and not just a stick in the ground. You know, the whole point of that sergeant, he's standing there, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Supposed to have 10. I've only got 9. All right, so let me, I remember the 9 that came past. Let's go up to the other end and find out who didn't run the whole distance. But it was a consistent thing. There was a purpose to the run. It may have seemed pointless to say, well, I'm just running this one road. Why not go ahead and take a shortcut and come back? The intent wasn't to see if you stayed on the road. The intent is to find out, are you in shape? Are you capable of handling what may come your way? There was a purpose to it. There was an intent. In our lives for God, do we want to be distracted with a useless occupation? You know, the folks that made the shortcut, they would get a fail on that physical fitness test. Do you know what that meant? They were marked as unfit for duty. If you fail too many of those, you're kicked out. You don't get to continue to serve. You're gone. Do you know the Lord is that way with us? He wants us to succeed. He wants us to be about business that's fulfilling His will, that's fulfilling His purpose. He set a course before us. Are we doing what we need to do to actually accomplish the will He's put before us? Y'all pray for me. Amen.